Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome to day 7 of the 2022 French Open. It is a day that is not yet done. It's around about 7:15 as we start this recording. There is a night session still to happen. Doesn't even start for about 2 hours, but there's a night session still to come on Philippe Chatrier. There is a singles match between Lena Rybakina and Madison Keys still going on, but we've had the majority of the day's action, certainly the action that will have an impact on the business end of the tournament as we see it. Obviously, now Holger Rune and Madison Keys are going to go and win the titles and make this podcast look silly. But anyway, for now, we feel confident that we're going to be able to bring you the big news stories from the day. It's been a bit of a ropey flat day, to be honest, folks. We're not going to try and polish this turd for you. We're going to try and entertain you all the way through the turd that was today. And to help us do that, we've got Simon Briggs.
I thought you were going to say it was a purist's day, Catherine.
It was anything but a purist's day, Simon. I don't know, did you see any purist's tennis yet today?
Yeah, I was thinking this was a really bad idea to come over here and talk about like the least inspiring subject matter of the fortnight, but I just thought maybe you need some help. There's a change of scene or something.
We appreciate it, Simon, and we absolutely do need some help. Should we talk about the fact that Iga Świątek lost quite a lot of games today? Should we lead with that? That potentially feels like the biggest story of the day. A straight sets win, but not a straightforward win.
No, Matt, was that the most games she's lost, like, collectively? She lost more today than she'd lost in the whole tournament, right?
Yeah, that's right. She had lost 2 in the first round, 2 in the second round, and she lost 8 today. So
8.
Double the number of games she lost in the first 2 rounds combined.
What went wrong?
She didn't play very well.
She won a straight set. What went wrong?
Well, that's it. I think, genuinely, if this was someone else, we would probably be talking about how it was impressive that they won when they weren't at their best. And I think that probably does apply here as well. But just because it was so different to everything we've seen from Świątek over the last month or so, it felt quite jarring. It felt like there was a little problem there. And I think particularly the forehand was all over the place. You know, she lost her timing on it and she just wasn't as ruthless as she normally is. You know, okay, she got pegged back in the first set, but then she was 2 breaks up in the second set and you were expecting it to be 6-3, 6-1. And then suddenly she didn't win a point for 10 minutes and lost 4 games in a row. And you just haven't seen that from Świątek for a long time. So it stood out, but yeah, she's through.
What's the net takeaway from this? Is it positive that she was able to win in straight sets playing far from her best? You know, that's today was what would count as winning ugly for Iga Świątek. 10 minutes without winning a point is quite a long, awkward period of time. Or is it a chink in the armour that will give others in the locker room hope?
I think the second, because Danka Kovanic, with great respect to her, she doesn't have a massive record. I mean, as I remember it, she was the player who beat Emma Raducanu in the Australian Open. And I think that was the first time she'd been to a third round of a slam. I mean, she does have a lovely serve, which was quite powerful and gave Świątek trouble on the return. But she also clearly had tennis elbow. I don't know if you noticed, but she was really struggling with her arm. and sort of having to manipulate her bicep and her forearm in what looked quite like discomfort. So if it had been a bigger name, or I mean a middle-sized name, then perhaps we would be saying, yeah, she pulled through excellently. But for me, that did sound little alarm bells that perhaps mentally this isn't going to be as straightforward as it had looked up to this point.
Well, you must feel, if you're her, that... I don't know how much notice she takes of what people say, but she'll obviously be fully aware of the sheer numbers involved in her streak. But she's the only top 10 player left. She can kind of only lose from here. Now, that's not completely true, because she can win the title, which would be amazing for her. But we all expect her to win the title anyway. So that must be a really tough position mentally to be in. You have to be so strong to be the overwhelming favourite like that.
Particularly, I think, in her next match, which will be against 19-year-old Chinese player Zheng Qinwen, who beat a very injured Lise Cornet today. And we'll talk about that match in a moment. But Zheng is totally fearless. I went to her press conference today. She rates her game big time. She said a number of times in that press conference, I know I've got the level.
Wow.
Over and over again. She's completely charming. I spoke to Chris Clary of the New York Times, who was also in that press conference, and he actually had a sit-down with her yesterday. I don't think that piece has been published yet, but he was very taken with her. He said she has got bags of personality. She backs herself. And, you know, like your Leila Fernandez's and your Emma Raducanu's, these young players with absolutely no emotional baggage and nothing to lose, she's utterly fearless. You know, the fact that she's playing someone on a 31-match win streak, I think rather than daunt her, I think she's really excited to get even the chance of trying to be the one that breaks it. It could be interesting.
Yeah, it's all completely new for her, isn't it? In the same way that it was for Fernandez, for Raducanu at the US Open. I was speaking to a coach a couple of days ago before her win today, who said that he already thought she was going right to the top, just looking at her game, just looking at her power. Top five, he said.
Wow.
I think she does have weapons, and she's very composed at the moment, and that's going to be a fascinating match.
Yeah, and I think the combination of weapons and fearless youngster is increasingly seeming to me like the sort of player that might have a chance against Świątek. And there are a lot of them left in the draw. You know, there's also Leila Fernandez. Maybe doesn't quite have the weapons, but her own competitiveness on court is kind of her weapon. And then there's Anisimova and there's Goff, but they're all in the other half of the draw. So I do think this next match for Świątek is standing out as if she can get through this, you know, she's obviously in a great place anyway, but this might be the tricky one next.
We were reminiscing earlier today about the origins of Check Me Out from Simon Briggs.
We reminisce about that a lot.
2019 US Open, beers in front of him, just as they are now.
That was the vibe, though, with Zheng today. Yeah, those were the words I was looking for, David.
Oh, well, that's really interesting to me. Zheng came on my radar simply because she beat Simona Halep. My assumption was Simona Halep was injured the way it had gone on. She later told us she'd suffered from a panic attack during that match. And I think as a result of that, I'd probably kind of almost ignored her opponent, the woman who'd won, and I didn't really watch her performance. So that's really, really interesting. I mean, crikey, we need to clue up on this young woman. I do, anyway.
Well, she's very... I'm sure, as you'd expect, she's very inspired by Lina. That was what I asked her about in press today, and she gave such a composed answer. She, as I was asking the question, she was nodding along, and she said, "Yep." And she said she gave me the dream. She said, "I watched Lina win here when I was very young. I mean, she would have been scandalously young, wouldn't she? She's 19 now.
Yeah.
Someone do some maths. She'd have been.
She'd be a child.
11,
8.
Yeah.
8. Oh, crikey. Bad maths. And yeah, she said she gave me my dream.
That's very interesting.
And you know, she basically said, look, you need to be able to see it to be it. And it was as a result of seeing her that I'm here now.
The reason I brought up Check Me Out again, Simon, is because it occurs to me, I don't think we've had you on the podcast since Leila Fernandez arrived on the scene. really.
I'm the harbinger of teenage excellence.
So what is she?
Canadian.
How did she... I mean, obviously, your attentions back in September would have been primarily focused on Emma Raducanu.
My attention is always focused on Emma Raducanu.
How many did you do?
I've written a piece on Emma Raducanu today, even though she went out of the tournament about 48 hours ago. I only discovered Kin Nguyen's name about 3 weeks ago when I was looking up other teenagers so I could compare them to Emma Raducanu. It's right. Like my entire world is in a prism
okay.
of Emma Raducanu.
I do remember about a week's worth of previews of the US Open with Emma Raducanu in them back then. But Leila Fernandez, what are your impressions of her? We obviously haven't spoken to you since she had that run, and your focus would have been on Raducanu, but Fernandez, what did you make of her?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen her a little bit this week, and the way that she's moving, and the way that she's taking the ball so early, and the way that she's dictating without power, but with that urgency, and the amazing direction she gets off her forehand, just seems to have the ball on a total string. Does remind me a little bit of the US Open. Her results are clearly much better than Emma's have been, which one might almost have picked that perhaps afterwards, because it probably is less of a massive change to digest. And, you know, she's, what, 25 in the world, probably on the race this year, something like that.
Oh, Simon's into the race.
El race, Simon.
Yeah.
That's what it is in Spanish.
They're quite... what's the word? The context is... very disrupted by the points that they both got in that slightly freakish tournament last year, the one with the weird balls, as Craig Tizzer would tell us. I think that's why I've been looking at the race, and also because of all the Emma Raducanu-ing I've been doing this week in terms of previews.
Yes.
Just quickly before we move on from Jeune Chin Wen, her match today against Elise Cornet, in which Elise Cornet was... very clearly injured. She didn't win a game. Love and three. It before she retired from the match. Extremely awkward. Elise Cornet heard some boos from her home fans.
Oh dear.
And had some things to say about that into the French media afterwards, Matt.
Yeah, she described the French support as surprising.
Always.
And she was really unhappy, you know. She felt it was disrespectful. And
she said it was worse than the injury, almost. It was making her feel worse than the fact that she wasn't able to compete today, which is pretty horrible.
I mean, I've, as you know, have been utterly in love with the French crowds this last week, because I've never encountered them before here. I haven't seen that yet. I mean, over the years, I've watched it on TV where... the crowd will... I remember a Sebastian Grosjean match once where they were so outraged at a call that had gone against him and a refusal from an umpire to overrule it that they started booing and whistling. And because Grosjean wouldn't tell them to shush, they refused to shush. And it just went on for several minutes. And at times you think, these people are out of order. Like, this is just proper disorder now. But in the stadium... I just haven't experienced that today. I was watching the qualifier today, Jean-Jean, over on Longland at the start of the day, and she's love five down. She gets out of her seat, and she's greeted like this returning hero, and they're trying to do everything they can to lift her. And I can see no wrong at this point with the French crowd. But I guess that's the other side that I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, I think I was about to say the same thing. It is the first time they've manifested this kind of two-faced quality that they have, the ability to turn on the sixpence. They can be loving you 1 minute, and then you just have to make one like low-effort point, and suddenly they're right on your case. And it is a classic. They really do watch very closely, but they're also so opinionated that they have a real character. It's one of the unique things about this tournament. So it's about time that you got a chance to observe it.
Yes.
I think Daniil Medvedev has found his natural home, hasn't he? Energy, crowd energy wise. Yeah. The dream has been restored by Paris.
I do want to see him take them on at some point, because today it was all very jolly. He was so good and he was absolutely destroying Miomir Kecmanovic. And then there was one moment deep in the third set when he walked up to a line call, circled it, umpire came down, they had a chat about it, he wouldn't accept it, he kept going, and then the crowd got fed up with this and they started to go boo, and he was like, oh, calm down, you know, like this to them. And they did. So he got them eating out of his hand.
I think they love him here.
But I was thinking, and I think they do, but just imagine if you played Hugo Gaston and Gaston was whipping the crowd up and Medvedev didn't like it. Imagine, I want to see that.
The thing is, though, Medvedev is also playing very, very good tennis.
Playing brilliant tennis.
Do we need to call a sort of emergency mid-tournament meeting? Is Medvedev in the mix? Because he was definitely not at the start of the tournament.
But the thing is, he's absolutely in the mix for the final. I think it's the same question as, is anybody from the bottom half of the draw in the mix? For me, he's put himself just behind Tsitsipas in that bottom half of the draw, and I'm starting to think that Tsitsipas Medvedev semi-final will happen. Yeah. And I know it's clay, I know Tsitsipas would be the favourite going in, but Medvedev loves playing Tsitsipas, generally speaking. He would have a chance in that.
Tsitsipas was brilliant today. Not the stiffest opposition.
It was exactly the opponent he wanted today. Mm. He knows Imma from the juniors, and he was really in his second round against Kolar, he didn't know that opponent at all, and I think he found that difficult. Whereas Imma, he knows his game, and Imma, he's athletic, but he doesn't have the weapons to hurt Tsitsipas, and Tsitsipas was looking like the clay court Tsitsipas we know, bossing the rallies and just way too good. And it was exactly the match he needed after 8 hours on court in the first two rounds. He just got it done. I'm sure it was under 2 hours today. It was exactly what Tsitsipas needed.
Imma sneaked past a very sick Dan Evans in the previous round. He's had a pretty poor season, and his forehand isn't really up to the standards you need against Tsitsipas. Sometimes the players say has the best forehand, don't they?
Yes, they do, yeah. I mean, Riley Opelka,
it's not very spectacular when you watch it, and yet it's lethal and it's so accurate. So that was always going to be a pretty one-sided match. I mean, for me, Medvedev was playing chess today. I mean, that's possibly a sort of Russian cliche. He's sort of two steps ahead of his opponent. But I just wonder, coming up against a player of sort of greater weaponry and ordnance, then he's probably not going to be able to apply those lovely touches and those awkward places in the court if he's coming up against somebody with a really big ball. That's my concern.
I would say that whoever comes through that bottom half, okay, if it's one of those two, they'd be in the mix, because the top half of the draw are just going to destroy each other. And by the time they get to the final, they're going to be in the right mix.
So they're four Medvedevs in your mix?
Yeah. Now, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not quite there yet. I wanted to bring it up because I think there's a conversation to be had now, but I think I agree with Simon that there are much bigger clay court tests ahead of him, and if he beat Tsitsipas and did make it through, I would give him a shot in the final. But I'm still not convinced he'll make it out.
Is he in Hurkacz's bit?
Well, he's in Hurkacz's half, but he would be to play Hurkacz would have to beat Tsitsipas. That would be the quarterfinal. Hurkacz, Tsitsipas. Hurkacz hasn't lost serve yet this tournament.
He's looking pretty good, isn't he? I mean, I know he played Goffin, and Goffin wasn't 100% fit today, but Hurkacz hasn't done this here before.
I think the thing is that he does look pretty good until he plays someone better. I think that is sort of Hurkacz's thing.
Mm.
If anybody else would like to propose another thing,
well, he did beat Medvedev at Wimbledon last year, didn't he? And he's had his Miami run. But I know what you mean. I don't necessarily trust Hurkacz to sustain that level against the best players.
Hurkacz will likely play Casper Ruud next, who's currently setting a break up on Lorenzo Sonego. Stefanos Tsitsipas will play the winner of tonight's match between Holger Rune and Hugo Gaston, which is going up against the football. down at the bottom of the draw, Daniil Medvedev faces Marin Cilic now, who ended Gilles Simon's French Open career today and was the only participant in his episode of This Is Your Life.
Well, in comparison to Songa, that was like a sort of a single rather than a double album, wasn't it? It was over in a blink. and possibly a relief for some viewers as well.
I think they really wanted him to lose in the first round on Simon Mathieu, so there wasn't the sort of direct visual
comparison.
You know, it was the exact same court, the weather was the same, it was all in the same place, it was just shitter for Gilles Simon. It was the same trophy, little trophy thing, which is really classy. It's a little cross-section of the court that they give them with the clay and top dressing on top, and then goodness knows what geology is beneath that. My dad's going to text me now when he listens to this and tell me exactly what geology is beneath it. That's a really nice touch. Amélie Mauresmo was there. It was all lovely, and had there not been the direct comparison 3 days ago of everyone Joe Wilfried-Tsonga has ever met coming out with custom-made T-shirts with his face on, it would have felt lovely today. But nobody had any T-shirts with Gilles Simon's face on.
I think Tsonga set a dangerous precedent now, because he's a very, very fine player, but he's not won a slam. So now we're getting one of these, you know, the big three stroke, big four. When they're going to retire, they're going to have to go bigger than Joe Wilfried-Tsonga. Well, that's, they'll have to book an entire session of court time for the interviews and the send-off.
I mean, there's an argument to say that Roger Federer invented an entire tournament to enable that he could have the perfect send-off.
Well, the Labour Cup.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to go on for 10 years, though, so he can do it. Right. I think he'll still be playing when he's 50.
The Simon match was, you know, obviously it was no contest, but the fact that it followed Cornet meant that there was a period in the day there where French players on Chatre lost 21 games in a row.
It was an awkward time. And there wasn't a lot going on elsewhere,
no.
Was there? It was a really...
It's been
it
a
really
rubbish
awkward
day, really,
period of the day.
I'm having the time of my life, but today was bloody awful. On the court, I mean, we're having a lovely time with our strawberries and beer around the table.
I'm aware we've still got matches in the women's draw still to cover, but while we've deviated to the men, let's stay there. Yannick Sinner and Andrei Rublev have set up a fourth round match, which I don't know what to expect from those sorts of matchups. They're so similar, Sinner and Rublev, aren't they? I mean, it's not going to be a variety fest, that one.
It's going to be a PlayStation game.
Mm.
Well, I saw the doctor or the physio come on in the second set, but I wasn't quite clear for Sinner what he was
knee problem
needing. Was it knee?
Yeah, he's got this heavy sort of tape around the bottom of his kneecap.
Right.
And looks like it's sort of holding it up or something. And then the trainer came out again and had consultations with him. But, I felt for his opponent, Mackenzie McDonald, in this match, because McDonald was the dominant player in the second set and he had 11 set points and he still lost it. I don't think I've ever seen a player have 11 set points in one set and lose it. And one of them was a forehand drive volley when his opponent was hopelessly out of court. And he got the whole court hit into cross court, so he's got all this space, and he hit it straight back to him and just got past.
It seemed to take hours, because I was running my Emma Raducanu piece, inevitably. and every time I looked up, it was like there'd been one more game added to Sinner's total, and it was sort of 15 minutes between me. Every time I looked up, it was a really painful reverse for poor old McDonald. He must have thought he was over the line, and it took him hours to lose that set.
Yes, it was 92 minutes, the second set, and there were more than half of the points in the match were played in the second set.
That's just about as long a set as I've heard of, to be honest.
It was,
apart
it,
from,
it was
you know,
ridiculous.
Final sets that, you know, played to 12 or whatever.
And, I mean, is Sinner really good in big moments? You know, we've talked this year about the fact that he's won so many matches from match point down. He saved all those set points today. Or is it a little bit Kei Nishikori's fifth set record, which is sort of boosted by the fact that he shouldn't be in those situations anyway? I can't quite tell. I don't feel like we've seen Sinner in enough really big match occasions. And by that I mean kind of where he is now in the draw. Second week of Grand Slams against the biggest players. Because I just haven't got a grip yet of how good Sinner is, really. He sort of does what he's supposed to, but I don't know. I don't trust him to power his way through this half of the draw, which is kind of the way he's talked about by some people, as having that potential.
I was talking to my friend at Golden Set Analytics about Alcaraz, and he was saying that the great thing about Alcaraz is that he plays every point the same, which is a hallmark of the very, very best. Whereas a lot of other people, when they're not under the pump, they can doze off a little bit. And if you're winning those points when you're down, set point, break point, because you're lifting your level, then that means that you've maybe not sort of been on it in those longers, let's say, in the middle of a set. I mean, even if they're not 91 minutes, it's a long time to keep your concentration, and maybe that's an issue for him.
David has a packing for a trip analogy for what you've just described.
Do I?
Yeah, you said it on the podcast the other day.
Oh, yes. The deadline bit. Yeah. Yeah,
you never... people that can only get their arse in gear when they've got a deadline looming.
Every journalist that I know, including me.
Is that true?
God, yeah. I mean, every wife of every journalist I know is pretty sick of dealing with it, I think.
Just get on with it now while you've still got 6 hours to go.
Were you like that in school?
So maybe I was destined for this bizarre life before I even left.
What's your Raducanu piece about?
More people talking about Emma Raducanu. I've told you, this is how I live my life. I'm a total prism.
Is that good? Is it good knowing that there's always something that, you can always reach for something Emma Raducanu related, rather than thinking, oh my God, I might have to write about Hubert Hurkacz today?
Yeah, it's good and bad, isn't it? Because there is always somebody out there willing to give me a quote on Emma Raducanu. On the other hand, it is something of a monoculture at the moment. We even had a Telegraph Saturday magazine piece, sort of a 4,000-worder that dropped yesterday. Not by me, I hasten to add.
Rehashing her entire life.
That is a lot of words.
It was a massive one. Yeah, Guy Kelly wrote it. I gave him a briefing before he went to interview her while she had her hair and makeup done for an advert. So it would have been six or 8 weeks ago. I don't know about the timing. It's slightly unfortunate that it landed just about 2 days after one of her less satisfactory defeats. But never mind.
I suppose when you've won the US Open the way she has, in front of a national audience the way she did, to that audience, it's basically all a free hit for the next few months. I mean, until Wimbledon, really. Wimbledon, when she turns up, if she were to lose early there... Those viewers, the 10 million that were watching Catherine present the coverage on Channel 4, they're the ones that will then say, I thought she was good. Because that's what it's like.
The level of interest in her does seem to be unquenchable in our country, though possibly not for your non-British listeners. So I feel a bit guilty now that I've now sidetracked you back onto the Raducanu chat. That's when everyone got sick of it.
It's my fault.
But it's a bit like that. Isn't there a Norse legend about the drinking horn that's connected to the oceans?
If there is, you might be the only person among us who knows it, Simon.
Yeah, I think Loki has his trick horn, and he invites people to have drinking contests with him. But his drinking horn is connected to the oceans and therefore replenishes itself no matter how much you drink.
Is that Tom Hiddleston?
Pardon?
Loki.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes. Well, that's a bit of a different one. That's Marvel Loki. That's very down market from Norse mythology Loki.
I assume the Marvel Loki is some sort of reference to the Norse.
Catherine,
I
was thinking the same.
Oh, right. Thank you for. I've not even seen those films. I've managed to debase myself.
I don't even know that one. So, what else have you
I've
been?
I've gone very off topic here, but it is a quiet day.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. What else have you been writing about, well, Simon?
It's kind of Groundhog Day again for me because I'm also doing the Russia row story for the umpteenth day in a row. And I did actually ask Daniel Medvedev about the four Russian winners who came on in the middle of the afternoon and whether he was exchanging messages of congratulation and whether they were almost, let's say, knotting together in support of each other amid this kind of hostility from some parts of the tennis world. But he answered it with typical grace and tact and said, well, I congratulate everybody who wins. And that's the great thing about tennis. We're all one big community, which, you know, he dealt with it very well.
You reported about potential legal action a couple of days ago from Wimbledon.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it was partly in response to stories in other papers that I felt we had to keep up with, but I don't see it happening. I think if they went down that road, then it would be the beginning of a suit and countersuit type scenario that would just leave everybody impoverished and exhausted and miserable. And they probably do realise that. What I'm hearing right now is that there's a big push to maybe make something positive out of this fiasco, and everyone's almost so ashamed of themselves that there could be a move towards a T7 supervisory board.
That wouldn't change anything for Wimbledon, but that would be a show of unity beyond Wimbledon.
Yeah, that it could improve the United tennis concept, but also it could perhaps come with a climb down on rankings points. I mean, remember that players in the wider player group belonging to both tours have, in their numbers, criticised the loss of rankings points. And remember that it is definitely going to make an impact on the tournament. Now, one very interesting tweet was John Wertheim's point about how people are cancelling their bookings in Wimbledon at the big private houses that players tend to reserve at great expense, let's say, before they go. And they're cancelling those not because they're not going to Wimbledon, but because they're going to go at the last minute and they're going to see how it goes. This is actually best encapsulated by John Isner's quote, where he said, I'm just going to turn up on Saturday, maybe see how it goes on Monday. And we're just not going to be that fussed about it all, you know. I think it's all going to be a little bit meh if people continue to play for no ranking points, and I think that there will be a solution sought for, and perhaps this United T7 board could give everybody a bit of a fig leaf and a bit of something to put forward and say, well, we're making the best of a bad situation and we're actually going to undo some of the worst ideas of the last week or two.
We were chatting to Mary Carrillo the other day about the sort of the knock-on effects, the unintended consequences of a situation like this and decisions such as those that have been made. And, you know, she was referencing how it might possibly affect ESPN, who, of course, have the US rights to Wimbledon, and how many people they deploy onto the coverage and that sort of thing. Is Wimbledon so sacred, / Emma Raducanu so sacred, that provided Andy Murray's there and Emma Raducanu's there, this couldn't possibly impact, you know, the level of resources that the Telegraph and other papers deploy? Or could you see a scenario where that is impacted somewhat by the potential meh-ness that you've just described?
Well, from a newspaper perspective, I think it's going to have that advantage of uniqueness and weirdness. I mean, that's always a positive for a reporter. I mean, the great challenge coming to work when you are a dedicated sports correspondent is make it one day different from the next. And this will be a very different Wimbledon. So I don't think that's going to be a problem for us. But well, that's quite different, isn't it, to broadcast, where it's not really about making it different, it's about making it sparkle.
I was talking to Aki again, just to mention her, the Japanese writer, and she was saying that, you know, due to Naomi Osaka's quotes, that she might not be at Wimbledon. I said, would that impact you as a freelance Japanese writer? And she said, well, maybe, but actually the opportunity to cover a kind of unique Wimbledon without any ranking points that would be news in itself, and that would be an interesting angle for a writer as well. So I suppose, as Simon says, it takes something away, but it adds something else.
When you get to finals day, Simon, and the trophies are on the line, would it impact the top line in any way in terms of its credibility?
You'd have to put a paragraph in high, wouldn't you, just to log this. Even though there are no rankings points at stake, this will still be a memorable moment for XYZ. Could even, as we know, be Novak Djokovic's crowning glory, in a sense, if he takes that
21st, if he wins the next one, and then in 22nd,
well,
if he were to win.
I'm assuming he's winning it, right?
If he wins this one. Are you assuming Novak Djokovic wins Roland Garros?
Yes. I always assume Novak Djokovic wins. That's my default position.
Very interesting.
There's a mix of 1.5 when I'm around.
So he's in the worst possible section of the draw. He's got to beat, assuming he beats Diego Schwartzman, he's got to beat Rafael Nadal, who's starting to look a bit like Rafael Nadal, and then he might have to beat Alcaraz just to get to the blooming final.
Yeah, I mean, I could be barking up the wrong tree. I mean, I watched pretty much the whole of Rafa on Longlan yesterday, just because I thought, I don't know when I'll maybe have a chance to sit so close to the court and kind of soak it up. And he was quite poor for the last 25 minutes, but the rest was excellent.
He says he got tight, didn't he? That has been a feature of these latter years of his career, that he gets extremely tight trying to close out matches. And it's fascinating. And I mean, that is an age thing, I suppose, isn't it? But the fact that it even affects, you know, 21-time Grand Slam winner is amazing.
What's your view, Simon, on if that quarterfinal happens, when it will be scheduled? Because to me, that is so crucial in trying to determine the outcome.
It's fascinating. It's a total head-to-head, isn't it? And reminiscent of that Wimbledon roof situation from a couple of years ago that caused so much stink among the respective fan base.
Which one was that?
It was the 2018 semi-final, where they played the first 3 hours of the match, the first three sets, under the roof on the Friday night, because Kevin Anderson and John Isner had gone on 26-24 in the fifth set. And then there was a controversial decision to keep the roof closed when they came back on the Saturday on a lovely, bright, sunny day. And obviously the feeling was that favoured Novak Djokovic, and Nadal wouldn't want the roof closed. And in the end, Novak Djokovic won the match.
And it was incredibly, incredibly close. So if there was like a 0.2% differential, which there totally would have been, then you can see that could have made a difference. And the argument was, if you start a match in a certain conditions, then you must finish it. And it totally hasn't been borne out in any other situation before or since.
No.
It's quite random.
Do we read anything into the fact that tomorrow, Sunday, so the next time they all in that top half of the men's draw play, obviously they've been juggling this situation all tournament with the fact that you've got three huge men's draw card, in the top half of the draw, and only two men's slots available on Chatrier, and one of those is considered conditions-wise undesirable. Certainly by Rafael Nadal. Well, tomorrow they've put Djokovic on Longlen. He's got the Longlen gig. Alcaraz is in the night session, and Nadal has his much-coveted third in the day session spot. Do we read anything into that? Does it mean anything for what they might do on Tuesday? Is it possible that Djokovic requested Longlen? I've heard that posited as a scenario.
I do really have an answer. I mean, all I would say, just from my Longlen experience, was I just sat there and thinking, this crowd is completely in love with Rafa. And I don't remember that being the case in the middle of his glory years, because everyone got a bit fed up with
Nadal fatigue. There was Nadal fatigue
from the fans and from the tournament, definitely. There was a year here, around about 2013, where they scheduled him. He was obviously defending champion, because he always was. They scheduled him first match on Longlen. He opened his title defence on Longlen. There was massive Rafa fatigue, and that is evaporated and then some, I think. There's this real sense of, this guy's incredible. Our our history and fabric of this tournament is so wedded to him, we must treasure him he's here.
Make the most of him while we got him.
That's why I was out there, to be honest. And yeah. I was watching one woman in the front row who was staring at him and then only looked up when the ball went forward. Then it was like in between points, she just watched him constantly. It was like she was like trying to get her Rafa quota for the rest of her life. And this one afternoon on Longman, she probably thought, she was actually in the front row, so she thought, I'm going to cash in today. And it just the affection for him was amazing, and it is something that happens to athletes at the end of their careers if they have a little bit of dip of popularity. And let's say nothing to do with Rafa's behaviour; it's always been terrific. Just he was so good that he did bore people for a while.
And we know if he pops up at the football tonight, that means he had a good practice today and he's feeling physically good, because that's what he told us in press yesterday. Yes, I've got my tickets; I intend to go, but only if I practice well.
If he's not there, I'm trying to think what I will do. I will get a prediction right if he's not there, I'm telling you.
It's basically saying to Felix Auger-Aliassime, I'm not feeling good, isn't it, if he's not at the football tonight?
Yeah, but he's going to be there.
Should we just deal with these other women's results that we've had today before we get sidetracked once again, which I'm already excited about? Jessica Pegula won her match today over last year's semi-finalist Tamara Zidanecek on her first match point.
Hooray!
That's well a double
done,
win, isn't
Jessica.
It?
So I think she's now up to 19 for the tournament, but across three matches.
And she has significant ramifications for Emma Raducanu's top 10 chances. That's the only thing I'm thinking about with that match.
Emma Raducanu correspondent over here.
Yes, because Jessica Pegula is now likely to get into the top 10.
Yes, and likely to mean that Emma Raducanu is not top 10 after this right. tournament. Not that I'm interested.
Jessica Pegula will play Arena. Incidentally, Zidanecek going out means that all four of last year's women's semi-finalists are now gone. Arena Camelia Begu will be Pegula's next opponent. She behaved herself today and beat the aforementioned Leolia Jean-Jean. I'd be interested to see if Jean-Jean pops up again, or whether she was just one of those, you know, curious, fun, compelling Roland Garros stories, you know, Trungaliti style.
I hope she does, because she plays nice tennis. I mean, she looked absolutely overwhelmed. 6-1, 5-1 it was at one point. Then she started to mount this comeback, and you can just imagine what it was like. And she couldn't quite get there. Won three games in a row. But I hope so, because she's a good story, you know, and she's got a roundabout way of getting to the point she is. But she's mixed it now with this company. Hopefully she can take something from that.
Veronika Kudermetova is also into the second week of this French Open. Now, she beat Paula Badosa today via retirement. Paula Badosa retiring at moments after David arrived on the Suzanne Long.
At the exact moment.
Yes. I poked my head out of Longlen Media Seats tunnel, saw Matt, said, hi, Matt, walked over. Ladies and gentlemen, Paula Badosa has been forced to retire in French.
Matt, you'd been sat there for the whole match. Was it unexpected? Was this knee injury something she carried onto court? She lost the first set. Was that a fair and square first set loss? What was going on out there?
It was odd. She started the match really well. She was 2-love up, had break points for a double break, didn't take it. And then there were 4 or 5 extremely competitive games that, you know, went to several deuces, and she had lots of chances to win them, but didn't. And Kudermetova started to get the ascendancy in the rallies and in the points. And, you know, Badosa was hitting the ball really well, but she wasn't having any impact. She wasn't opening up the court. She was mainly just hitting it through the middle. And Kudermetova was quite happy to trade and rally and kind of had the better of the match. And then at 5-2 to Kudermetova in the first set, Badosa went over to the umpire and said, can I have the trainer, you know, at the next change of ends? And trainer came out, saw to her knee, took a medical timeout. She started the second set, fell down a break, and retired there and then on the spot. So it was a bit odd. I would have to see her press conference transcript to know whether it was something she came onto court with or not, but it seemed to me like maybe she did it or worsened it during that first set. And yeah, it's another setback really for her, isn't it? Because she was, you know, I thought that win the other day against Kaya Juvan was really impressive, and it felt like such a confidence boost. She said that herself, didn't she? But you know, she's not been able to make the kind of progress in this tournament that she would have been hoping for.
I really don't think we've seen her at her physical peak since she won that Sydney title. Okay, she hasn't been necessarily injured, but she's looked sort of strangely gassed in the latter stages of matches since then. You know, remember that victory she scored over Marta Kostyuk in that grueling match at the Australian Open, and then she lost the match after that quite limply and one-sidedly, and that was coming in the form of her life. And since then, she just hasn't looked quite right. And I actually had a very brief chat with your friend of mine, Pam Shriver, about this earlier, and she just said, well, her career transformed so much around about a year ago. That was when she had her glow up as a tennis player. I mean, she first really came to my attention in Madrid last year when she reached that semi-final. I know she'd had results in Charleston before that, but basically she transformed around about a year ago. And that means she's been, when you win more matches, you play more matches. You know, the number of matches she's been playing on tour, her tour playing life has looked completely different for the last 12 months, and her body will need to catch up with that and get used to that,
as will her mind, because it's a culture shock, really, to transform your world in a good way. I mean, it's wonderful, but it's not what she'd been used to. And I think the problem is, I still think that this thing about the ranking is relevant. That, you know, you, when you're coming up, you don't have to have that many good results for your ranking to keep going up. And then you reach a point where you have to really be winning tournaments for it to go up anymore. And I think that just psychologically, that's not that easy.
All I can add to this is that I was talking to Nick Brown, who used to coach Świątek when she won the junior Wimbledon title, and he said that he'd watched Świątek and Badosa going hammer and tongs at each other on the day before the tournament in a practice that was so intense. He said he'd not seen anybody practice at that level of attack since Graf 30 years ago. And he thought that was like a very good sign for Shante, but maybe it wasn't such a good idea for Badosa if she was feeling miles in her legs.
She needs to stop playing really well the week before Grand Slams.
And start playing well when you've predicted her to win the tournament.
Abso-friggin-lutely. Veronika Kudermetova awaits the winner of the match still to be decided between Madison Keys and Elena Rybakina. They have just split sets over on Simone Mathieu. Tomorrow's schedule looks thus. Starting on Chatrier with Fernandez against Anisimova.
Oh, hello.
I will be there.
What time is that?
11 a.m.
No, midday. Midday,
mate.
Matt will be there
in bed.
But Matt will be there at 11.
He
wants to make sure.
Then we have Elisa Mertens and Coco Gauff. I feel weirdly confident in Coco Gauff all of a sudden. Not necessarily she's going to win the tournament, but she will
win that match.
Do at least what she's supposed to do and maybe a bit more.
What's that?
Well, she's
that. That was such a David
well,
thing
look,
to say.
I mean, she's the high-ranked player.
Okay, so what's she going to do?
And yet, that's probably quite a tricky match. Hang on, I'm just looking at the draw. Who would she play?
I've got her in the final. So
yeah, I think I've backed Anisimova in my. But I don't know. Don't know. She might do it. Then we have Felix Auger-Aliassime against Rafael Nadal, and the night session tomorrow, Carlos Alcaraz against Karen Khachanov. Long Len starts with Martina Trevisan against Alexander Sasnovich. Then it's Novak Djokovic, the world number one, against Diego Schwartzman.
I might do a Simon Briggs and try and get a close-up look at Djokovic there on Long Len. Not because I think he's retiring anytime soon, but it's an opportunity to watch him very up close.
Wow, yeah.
And you can stay on for Alexander Zverev against Bernabe Zapata Miraez, Matt. Doubleheader.
Or I could not.
Up to you. We'll see. We'll let you know tomorrow what Matt decides.
At least Matt knows how to say his name. I butchered it yesterday. What's his name again?
Bernabe Zapata Miraez.
That's the one.
And then it's Jill Teichmann against Sloane Stephens, which I think could be a corker. And that's it for singles action.
Yeah,
it goes down to just the two courts.
Hannah
from
on Twitter
tomorrow
said, oh, look how small it looks, the order of play.
No. I mean, there's doubles, obviously, and we will talk about that. But this is the stage where it suddenly gets very, very serious, doesn't it? One thing while we've got you, Simon, that I wanted to talk about, something that we spoke about on a pod a few nights ago. It must have been whatever day it was Emma Raducanu lost, which I'm sure is tattooed about your person somewhere. We were talking about our difficulty in talking about her losses because we feel a certain, potentially misguided, but whether it's misguided or not, we feel it, a certain responsibility to kind of correct the sort of Twitter mob of completely predictable morons that say the things that they say about Emma Raducanu every time she loses. Oh, she was rubbish. She was a flash in the pan. You know, she's her forehand's rubbish. All the rest of it. I'm not quite sure what my question is here. Do you feel that same responsibility to sort of to be positive about her, or to at least try and be positive about her?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit like the players who sometimes take social media and extend it to the media on the who are professional and confuse the two. I think generally it has been pretty respectful and proportionate and contextualised ever since she won the US Open. It's so difficult because if you're in the sport, you knew that it wasn't going to be an easy year for her. But if you're not, then you're naturally expecting her to do stuff. And it doesn't help when, you know, there's some of the headlines that get put on everybody's pieces, including mine. You know, it can be extremely inflating, very, very tire-pumping. And that just translates into this impossible level of expectation. But, I mean, I did notice that press conference was unbelievably kind to her. And I did put a sentence in my piece saying Joe Konta might have been looking on thinking, how does this girl get away with it? Bloody hell. They would have been asking me six times why I didn't, you know, cut down my Armed Forces account. But, you know, that's the time that she deserves and the time that she's earned, you know, particularly with her fast start in the game.
Can I just ask, as a final point, what story are you looking forward to writing this next week? What do you think is... what would be the best story for you out of everything that's left in the tournament?
Yeah, probably Alcaraz, wouldn't it? I mean...
What's the cut-through on Alcaraz in the UK?
Yeah, I haven't seen it really. I mean, I did a piece about his drop shot before the tournament, which I think sank without trace, a bit like the drop shot.
Yeah, but we can bring it back for the rest of the tournament when he reaches...
You can repurpose it when he wins the tournament.
Exactly.
Pop a new photo on it.
It's one of those sort of big production with lots of graphics and everything.
Do we need to put a link in the show notes?
Oh, yes. It's a good piece. I enjoyed it.
So he needs to win something to have the cut through. He needs to win one of these.
Yeah, it's always the same, isn't it? I mean, it's a little bit like that for even Cameron Norrie, British number one. I mean, he's poor lad hasn't gone past the third round of a major, and until he does that, he still remains a pretty tough sell back home. Mm. It's all about slams.
But Djokovic is going to win it anyway, says Simon.
Djokovic is going to win it anyway.
Is that's just a reflexive thing, is it? Or is he actually your pick? Have you seen what you've seen this tournament?
I just thought, you know, Rafa, physically, is he going to be able to cope? Alcaraz, I don't think mentally he'll be able to cope. Novak, does he have any weakness? Nope.
Świątek?
Yeah, I think she'll probably do it. But I mean, she was bloody wobbly today. And she can't afford to keep on doing that. Somebody could come up the other half of the draw with no expectation on them and take her out, quite possibly.
And can we also say that Simon's revealed figures to us over the last fortnight that tell us that tennis is in a good place in the Telegraph world?
Yeah, we've been high ranking on the list of Telegraph most popular pieces in the last 12 months. The data is in.
High ranking? It's a landslide, Simon.
Maybe we've had something to do with it. Pumping up Simon's tyres.
I can't blow my own trumpet. I just have to...
David's blowing ours.
I am.
Just have to take my word that tennis is going gangbusters.
Hey, we got that in there, Simon. We always have gangbusters in the podcast when Simon's on.
Right, I think that's all topics just about covered.
Yeah, there's a party about to start.
Who needs great tennis to talk about, hey? I mean, let's please have some great tennis tomorrow.
Yeah, please.
But yeah, I think we've filled the void. And I think what we're experiencing here is the pre-Hugo Gaston / pre-Champions League final fun times.
Yeah.
We're right in the midst of it, folks. And it is fun times, isn't it?
Oh, it's brilliant, this tournament. How come you lot never told me how good this is?
I think we might have mentioned it once or twice. Anyway, it's great to be here. Thank you to Friends of the Pod for allowing us to be here. I know I say it a lot, but we really couldn't be more grateful. Make sure you sign up to Matt's newsletter. I've been privy to the stats.
Oh, I'm excited.
It's very, very good. It's a continuation.
It's a continuation of a theme.
It's a continuation of a very...
Seeds going out.
Very good theme.
Do like a theme.
Mm.
So sign up.
Yeah, so make sure you sign up for that. We have our mascots, of course. David and Darwin's hopes for the day still very much hang in the balance because David and Darwin... Darwin, I don't know if you know about this, but you have picked Madison Keys.
No, you haven't. You've picked Rebecca.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, they're on serve in the deciding set, so could go either way. Doesn't really matter. I've got Carter, and Carter and I backed Hubert Hurkacz.
Oh,
and that
God.
Went well for us today. And Matt backed David Goffin. Sorry.
Oh, Matt, what has gone on there?
He was playing so well.
Yeah, well.
I got sucked in when he said, I think I can go deep in this tournament.
You're sitting too close to me, aren't you?
Matt, of course, is sponsored by the dearly departed Gerald the Cat. We have Cooper, our tournament mascot. Hello to Cooper and hello to Drew and David, who are in our midst, I think, here in Paris. Drew and David, Cooper's owners. We have our executive producers and top blokes, Chris Albert Lee and Kyle Weingartner. And we have shout-outs, Matt.
We do. We have Susan Ramsey in Scotland.
All right, Susan. Susan writes to us every now and again. Always happy to receive an email from Susan.
I hope she says nice things.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Any tennis Lovely. Susans, Simon?
Sarandon?
On that note.
She's a good player. Can we just say, can we extend to Suzanne, maybe?
Yes.
For long live?
Given we're in France.
Who had a nice picture next to the statue of today?
We also have Jim Session in Melbourne.
Right, Jim.
Oh, hello.
I saw Jim Curry yesterday from a distance.
Yeah. Well, this Jim says, I hold an undefeated record on court 3 at Melbourne Park. One win from one match in an under-16s tournament.
Ooh. It's a nice court 3.
It's a nice court.
It's a good record as well, 100%.
Well done, Jim. Courier is the only tennis Jim I can think of.
I know a couple of others. Jim Grab. Do you remember Jim Grab?
Nope.
Nope.
Oh, dear, dear. Renneberg and Grab. The listeners are all going, yes, David, I know who you mean. Don't listen to them.
Jim Grab relived.
I'm telling you.
Absolutely nowhere near you.
I will
soon.
Never forget John McEnroe and Michael Stich against Jim Grab and Richie Renneberg on the day after the Wimbledon final because of rain. And they let everybody in for free, and it was about 1917 in the fifth set. It was amazing.
Something strange has happened to David.
Oh,
Matt.
I'm going to go and get that. I've got that on video somewhere. I'm going to go and get that out.
The last one is Emmett Stanton from Baltimore, which, as he points out, is the birthplace of Pam Shriver.
Hey! Hooray for Pam! Hooray for Emmett!
Was it Emmett that messaged us on Instagram earlier and said that the only other time in his career that Marin Cilic has beaten Gilles Simon, he went on to win the title?
It might have been Emmett. US he does Open. Message us. He is very knowledgeable.
And thus, does that make Marin Cilic the favourite for this title?
And the answer is no.
Imagine if Marin Cilic won this title.
Mm.
Nobody's picked that one.
Would that's, tennis still be
not,
the top-performing sport
it's
in the Telegraph?
It's not
going
to make the numbers
happens.
Go gangbusters, that is it, Simon.
The big Marin piece.
You'd ask him how he feels
words.
About Emma Raducanu, wouldn't you?
This isn't bearing well for the big piece
tomorrow,
he's got to write about Marin. Surely.
Yeah, tomorrow, who is going to talk about Emma Raducanu? That's my question from the Sunday. It's actually quite a good day, isn't it? I mean,
find out what Marin Cilic thinks.
It's a remarkably unbalanced opposite days, as it always is, isn't it? How
it often is, yeah.
We're going to have to book you in for Monday now, I think. Could be a bit ropey. Anyway, whatever the tennis, we'll be here to entertain you. Thank you for listening, as always. Thank you, Simon, for joining us. We'll speak to you all soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.